The best way they know how to make time equal money is at a job, and you quit to go follow your passion. You don't understand the process of knowing how to transmute your time into value yet. So you now have full control over your time, but where are the dollars?
What is up, my fellow side hustlers? This is your friend and host, Ryan Helms. I want to welcome you to the Hustle to Freedom podcast. I'm part of a small minority that are taking action because we just aren't satisfied with waking up, going to a 9-to-5 job, then coming home only to repeat it again the next day and never make any real progress in life. We're here to create our own path, our own happiness, our own freedom, and we refuse to be just another cog in the machine. Because we have busy lives and limited resources, we can't just throw stuff against the wall and hope that something sticks. We have to play smart and move forward each day with consistent focus and deliberate effort while using only today's best tactics and most efficient tools. We aren't going to sit back and hope for a 3% raise each year. We are building additional income sources that will allow us to create the life we want. We call ourselves Freedom Chasers. And this podcast highlights the journeys of these everyday people who are creating extraordinary side hustles. Welcome to the Hustle to Freedom podcast. In this episode, I'm sitting down with world-famous mentalist Jonathan Pritchard. And no, that doesn't mean he's crazy. It means he can read your damn mind, kind of. We talk about how he's been able to turn his passion into something that pays the bills and lands him on stages in Vegas, America's Got Talent, and much, much more. So let's not waste any more time and hop into this episode now.
Hey, my name is Jonathan Pritchard. I'm a speaker, consultant, trainer that basically, long story short, teach people how to be so good at communication, people assume you can read their mind. So that's kind of the elevator pitch, condensed, professional communicator, everybody. Don't try this at home. I'm condensed communicator, I tell you what. So yeah, as you can tell, I'm very serious and I never make mistakes and I'm a professional at what I do. World-class speaker, right?
100% of the time.
Yeah, yeah. I have no foilables. I am impervious to failure.
Cool. So you're a master communicator. How did you, that's an amazing title. A lot of people, I think, struggle in life because of their inability to communicate. I think communicate in a lot of ways. I think one of the big challenges is people don't know how to communicate their worth, their value to people, mm-hmm. whether they're selling themselves, their service, or trying to get a promotion in their job. So I'd love to get into that down the conversation, down the road in this conversation. But can you kind of take us back to like, how did you get to being a normal kid? I guess you were a normal kid at one point.
Hell of a communicator. I was so weird growing up because I was super shy, like really shy kid. So I'm intensely introverted. I would much rather spend 4 days not see a single human being and I'll be fine. But growing up, I was that shy kid. And after school, the bus would drop me off near where my mom worked, which was right across the street from the library. So every afternoon from 3 until she was off work at 5:30 or so, I just spent those hours at the library, made my way to the hobbies and games section, and then found these books called magic books, which is really cool. So I started looking at those and illustrations from 1940s. I was like, this is neat. And it was like, fool your friends. I was like, even better. So I started learning magic tricks on my own. And learning magic is kind of a solitary endeavor. So you don't really collaborate with a lot of people. It's a lot of hours spent by yourself practicing stuff nobody will ever see, like if you do it right. So those magic books in the library was kind of my alone time every day. So I started doing magic, but it was just a hobby I did for myself. myself, and I would bug my parents, hey, look, here, pick a card, let me do a trick. And, oh, very good, Jonathan, yes, you found my card, excellent. And so I bothered them, and when I was 13, I learned how to juggle from my dad. Like, my dad and all my uncles knew how to juggle, so I learned how to juggle. And then a woman that my mom worked with, her kid was going to go to a summer camp but couldn't go. It was like every Tuesday, Thursday in the small town. And so they're like, does Jonathan want in? Yeah, sure, why not? So I roll up, and it's this long-haired dude who used to be a street performer, a street clown and juggler in South Florida that retired to the mountains of North Carolina where I was growing up. And he goes, oh, you know how to juggle. Let's teach you how to juggle pins. So I learned how to juggle pins and learn clown skills. And then I learned how to juggle those pins. He goes, hey, you want to set them on fire? It's like, yes. So 13 years old, I'm juggling fire, right? So juggling was a great way for me to get out of my shell, because I could juggle and demonstrate the skill without having to put myself out there by saying anything. So then it would naturally draw a crowd and people go, oh man, that's fantastic. And that felt good. So I learned how to get that positive reinforcement without having to say anything. But then my mentor, Randall, he showed me all of his scripts. He taught me all of his scripts. You say this way, you get this laugh. And then I would do exactly what he told me. And then I would get exactly the results he told me it would get. And it was amazing. You go, oh, so there's strategy involved. There's an outcome you want. There's somebody who can already do it. Find a way of getting them to share what it is that they know. Then just do exactly what they tell you and you'll get the results. So it took me 2 decades to realize how fortunate I was to realize that lesson so early, that the power of mentorship can save you a lifetime's worth of trying to figure it out yourself. So that's kind of how I got started being in front of people for a living. My first paid gig was 13 years old. I walked around and did magic at a company picnic. So I went, wait a minute, I just get to walk around, talk to people for 2 hours, and then I get money. All right, fantastic. So that was kind of my side hustle all through high school and college, and then became my full-time gig once I graduated school. Mm-hmm. So that's kind of that's the medium version.
There's
a much longer version, but condensed my whole life. I teamed up with another mentor, James Randi, who has a $1 million challenge to anybody who claims to be genuinely psychic. Well, I was the guy handling applications for the challenge and designing testing protocol for the people who claimed to be psychic. I'm like, yeah, right. You're either lying to yourself or to me, man. All right. Because if you were actually psychic, you would totally revolutionize physics as we know it, and the world would be different, but it's not. So you're not. So that was my kind of master's class in mentalism, which is kind of the study and understanding of how and why people think the way that they do.
So you just read my mind, because I was going to ask you what it is.
See, I'm just so good. I'm just so good, right? So that's it. Another way of thinking about it is, imagine a magician graduating to mind reading, right? Because a magician does tricks with objects. Look what I can do. I can change the fundamental forces of nature. I can bend reality to my will. Look what I can do. But a mentalist can't do mentalism without an audience. It's much more collaborative. And I'm working with the most interesting thing on the planet, which is my audience member, right? So I got really interested not only in understanding how magic tricks work, but why our minds are wired to make them possible in the first place. You can't do a magic trick for a machine. There's nothing there to fool. So once you understand, oh, we're constantly making assumptions about the world and how it operates, and constantly testing our experience against that model of what we think is going to happen. And we're really good at that. But every once in a while, you miscalculate dreadfully. You sell your house to invest in Bitcoin, and then it crashes in 3 months, and now you're out on the streets, right? Just like, well, that didn't go how I thought it would, right? So it's learning how those fundamental beliefs that you don't even know you have govern what you think is possible in your life or in business or anything else. So that's why I always say that there are kind of 2 ways to think about life. And for me, it's one, as an audience member. Are you just sitting there watching the show happen? You're watching this other person do the impossible, right? You know for a fact, no, people don't float. Tigers don't appear out of nowhere, right? That can't happen. But you know what? There's a dude on the stage who's doing it right now. So it is clearly possible. It's just you don't understand the strategies that get the result that you want. So I performed at colleges for about 10 years, and I'm doing a professional mind reading show. It's a 70-minute theater show where where I create very convincing demonstrations that I can predict future, influence people's choices, all this kind of cool stuff. So then the college kids don't know I'm not a rock star. So to them, I am. So they're willing to stand in a 45-minute line to get my autograph and be like, oh my God, you were so great. And I was like, yes, I am. So I would talk to people after the show because, you know, I travel a lot. So I do spend a lot of time by myself. And then that hour show is the only time I'll get to talk to anybody for the next 48 hours. So it's kind of like the performer gets unleashed on the audience. Like, hey, everybody, look at me. Please love me. Please love me. Please validate my existence. The show's done. And then there's the long line and you go, yay, I'm a human being again. So you talk to people after the show. And then the same conversations keep cropping up. It'd be the same 20 questions, just the person would change. But the thing that kept cropping up that really blew my world apart so often that the kids would go, man, you're living the dream. You're traveling. You're getting paid to do what you love. I can't even imagine doing that. And they literally couldn't imagine doing anything other than the standard social narrative that we're all sold from when we're 5 years old. You got to sit still so that you can get a good grade so that you can get to the next level. And then you need to get to the next level so you can get to the next level. And then you graduate high school. Then you go to college to get a degree, to get a sensible job, to, you know, live the idea of the life that other people have for you. And then it's not until you've wasted your life before you realize, you know what? Oh, I never actually sat down and dreamt up what would be the cool life that I've always wanted to live. Because there's always that voice that go, nah, that won't work. And every voice that you have in the back of your head, I can break it, right? That whatever it is in your head, well, it's easy for you because you've always been doing it. No, I grew up in the mountains of North Carolina. If you're a tree, it's a great place to live, right? It's like most of the people that grew up in the county where I lived were below the poverty line. I grew up in a single wide trailer on a dirt road, literally, right? So whatever excuse you've got, whatever that voice, well, I can't because, well, there you go. That's the most insidious enemy that you have to compete against. And you know what? It's you. And it's your own thoughts. It's your own beliefs about what you think is real, but actually isn't. So it's you that's keeping it stuck, right? And it's your resistance to that truth that keeps you stuck and unable to make any change because you don't own up to it. And yeah. Until you own up to it, good luck. There's nothing you're going to do.
I think a lot of people, there's these false beliefs, as I'll call them, that they realize they have. And then I think there's this whole other side of it where they have these false beliefs that are guiding their life and they don't even realize that that's why they're doing what they're doing or that's why they're not doing what they want to be doing, like you're saying. I mean, what's something that you've learned through developing your expertise that can help someone that's battling these false beliefs?
If you keep seeing the same problems cropping up over and over again, if different people in your life at different times in your life wind up saying the same stuff to you, you're the only common denominator, right? It's not that, well, I'm just attracting these same people, so I gotta increase my vibrations. No, you've got some serious work to do, all right? And the exact instant that you say something else or someone else is responsible for anything in your life, you've given up your control of making a difference about it, right? So if you go, well, if this were different, then I could do this. I would be doing that if only this were different. It's like, no, you become different, then your reality shifts to accommodate that, right? But this isn't just put it out into the universe and the universe will take care of you, because this is getting into what I like to call personal alchemy, right? Because everybody's heard, oh, time is money. It's not actually, right? Time is the most valuable thing in your life, potentially, because alchemists always like to think, oh, it's some wizards in the Middle Ages doing some dumb stuff, but they were actually onto something pretty cool, right? So they believe, all right, that lead is the base metal, right? It's nothing cool, but it's it's gone through this process of purification and it ascends in value until it's gold, the most valuable thing. So they were looking for that process of transmuting the nature of lead into something that they valued. So if they had figured out that process, then lead would have been more valuable to them than gold because they would have known how to make gold, right? So most people don't know how to make their time worth dollars. The best way they know how to make time equal money is at a job that pays them a wage, because that is literally the most valuable way that they understand how to spend their time. So it's through work, through the job, that transmutes their time into a paycheck, right? So if that's the only way that you know how to make value for the world and you quit to go follow your passion, you don't understand the process of knowing how to transmute your time into value yet. So you now have full control over your time, but where are the dollars? I was told that time is money, and I have a lot of time on my hands, guys. I got, holy cow, I got 24 hours to twiddle my thumbs. What the hell am I going to do?
Yep.
Right? So you have to master that personal alchemy of understanding how to create value, and not just once, but invest that time once and then be able to leverage that result of how you spent your time with infinite scalability by way of the internet.
So how have you done that?
Oh, dude, it's not easy. All right. I'm saying, well, it's simple. All right. It's simple. You just
I'm putting you on the spot here.
Science, right? But the way that I've started to do that is online courses, through a book, through creating content to generate trust with my readers and my followers, to create a following of people who understand what this guy shares is fantastic. I've never thought about stuff like this. It totally breaks my mind. And the instant I realized I could think about it differently, I can make different choices. And now my life is totally better a year later. Okay, this is amazing. I'll buy whatever this guy puts out, right? So I spend my time creating content and ways for people to change their life that can live without me having to be present. So you set up a web presence, so that way you can reach people across the world. Hello, people across the world. So you've got your website, you've got your social media presence to generate eyeballs, get them to your website that qualifies people. They show up and go, oh, this is fantastic. This is exactly what I'm looking for. And you go, you want even more? Sign up for my emails. Because I've had the same email for 13 years or something ridiculous. So emails are phenomenal. Every guru is going to tell you, oh no, man, you need to be in Facebook groups. You need to be on this. You need to be on that. But over the years, email has been the only thing that you can still own, right? Twitter could ban you tomorrow because you said one thing wrong and then now your 50,000 followers are gone. Now what?
Yeah,
right?
Yeah.
So you have to own your platform. You have to own your platform and then consistently create value for people, and then have ways that people can give you money and make it easy for them, right? Don't make it hard for people to give you money. Like, what are you doing?
Right.
So be on Stripe, be on PayPal, be on Gumroad, be on Patreon. Like, who cares? Be on Bitcoin, right? Just, hey, support the project, whatever it is. Have as many different ways that people can give you money as possible. And then just tell the world about it, right? Because just like people believe that time is money, people believe that content is king. Well, if I write another blog post, then I'll make it. Focus your time on creating high value content and then spend a lot of time telling the world about it, because nobody cares about you as much as you care about you. So you got to show the world why you're worth caring about. Like, boy, I wish people would just appreciate me for my inherent humanity and value as a person. Nope, the world doesn't work like that. Yeah. I don't care how nice you are. The only person that cares how nice you are is your mom. Have you called your mom lately? Call your mom, all right? Because she loves you the way you think other people should love you. And she's the only person. Everybody else only cares, how do you make my life better? That's it. All right. Yeah. So make people's lives better and you'll make your life better.
Yeah. I agree completely with that. Especially what you said there about, you know, create something amazing and then go out there and promote the hell out of it. You know, I just got done writing. I never thought I would write a blog post as long as I just did. It was almost 27,000 words, and I could put it out there and it's it's the best. I can confidently say it's the best piece of content on that topic on the internet. But if I don't do anything about it, like, people may eventually start to find it, but it's not gonna do what I want it to do unless I actively go out there and promote it and show people that it has the value. So
exactly. And then you're gonna figure out a million and one ways to tell people why it's so awesome.
Yep.
You're gonna have the dumb quote over a sunset picture on Facebook with a link to the article, right? Because see, the problem is people don't understand what their problem is. Just like they don't have a way to access the limiting beliefs. Like, okay, Bob, you just told me I have limiting beliefs, but I don't have them. You're like, oh yeah, okay, sure. Just because you don't see them doesn't mean they're not there. Hashtag demons, right? So you've gotta sell people what they want so that you can give them what they need. Right. So right now, I'm not giving your audience what they want. Right? What they want is, you know what? I have a proven system that can guarantee that you leave your job in 3 weeks from now. You do exactly what I say for the next 21 days, and you're going to be on your way to be a millionaire. You give it 6 months, you'll have six figures in the bank, and your woman will love you, and all your problems will be fixed, and you'll be a rock star. Give me $2,000, and I will guarantee you that change will happen. Okay. You know what? Like, yeah, actually what I know can make that happen. But if I sell it that way, they're going to expect, oh, he's going to do it all for me, right? But really, it's just sitting down and beating people over the head. Like, look, what you're doing is not getting you the results you want. So you got to figure out how to get the results you want. You don't know? I do. So do what I'm telling you to do, and then you'll get what you want. Well, that sounds like work. I don't want that. I want a proven system.
Well, just what like I- you said yes. with your mentor, you know, he told you what to do and what the outcome would be, and you did it, and that was the outcome.
Right. So that's why I have a virulent, a burning hatred for motivational speakers. I hate, loathe, will fight motivational speakers. Right? Because they are perpetuating the wrong way the world works. You know why you keep failing? You don't have enough motivation. You gotta be motivated. You gotta believe in yourself. You gotta, you know, believe that you can do this. You know what gets me motivated? Results. You know what is needed to get results? The right strategy and effort. Mm-hmm. Where does motivation come into that? Oh, it doesn't. I don't care how you feel. I don't care if you don't feel like doing it today. Show up, do your work to get your results, right? Results get you motivated. Motivation gets you nothing.
Yeah.
But people are sold on this belief that it's a lack of motivation that is the cause of their no results. So the only people that need motivation are people that can't do what they want to do. That's it. If you've ever thought, I'm just not feeling motivated today, and if I were just motivated, I'd be successful, you're wrong. You're dead wrong. And as long as you believe that, your dreams will continue to die. Enjoy that slow death. Enjoy that slow decay of any possibility of happiness, of looking towards a brighter future. And it's your belief that it's motivation that's doing it. You're doing it to yourself. So yeah, that's why I hate motivational speakers. I hate them because they come in and be like, oh yeah, in a week, you're going to be right back to square one, but that's why you got to pay me to come back again. They, screw you, dude. Like, come on. You're a predator. You're selling snake oil. God, I hate it.
I can see it. So those of you listening can't see it on his face right now, but I can attest he is telling the truth when he says he has a disdain for motivational speakers.
I just, you know, it's like, okay, rah-rah is good. Knowing you're on the right path is great, but, you know, results will do that for you. You don't have to trick yourself into it, right? And it's the same thing with gratitude. Gratitude is a feeling. When the situation happens where you experience gratitude, awesome. But this stupidity of, I got to have a gratitude journal. I have to have a gratitude practice. That's some sort of weird mental manipulation and masturbation, is trying to elicit this feelingness, when really what it is that you're trying desperately to do is to appreciate your life. Appreciation doesn't automatically mean love everything about it. Think of it like a pawn shop owner. Somebody brings in something, you appreciate its value. Then you can make a decision of whether or not you want it in your shop. Mm-hmm. So if you never appreciate the value, high or low, of your choices, choices, the people in your life, the actions you're doing, your hobbies, how you spend your time, then you're always going to have a low value life, right? So it's not gratitude you're looking for. It's learning how to discern good quality from bad quality. That's it. Now that you want to do every single day, all day long with every single thing you do. Yeah. And then that's easy. Once you learn, you're like, oh, I've been doing this gratitude thing all wrong, right? So that sound of your brain breaking right now out in podcast land, that's the feeling of gratitude, of finally finding the way of doing it right. But you can't trick yourself into it. It's just like trying to trick yourself into thinking there's one more stair at the top of the stairs than there is, right? And then you go for it and then you go, oh, and you step through something that's not there, right? That's a very disorienting experience and you can't fake it, right? You're smart enough to know you can't fake gratitude. You know it. That's what that weird feeling inside is when you go, I need a gratitude practice, but why is gratitude just not happening? It's because you're smart enough to know it's fake. Like, you know you can't trick yourself into it. You just haven't ever had a better explanation. You've never had anybody actually just sit down and go, all right, this is a whole bunch of horse crap. And you got to do the right thing to get the right thing. So here's what to do to get the results you want. And in very short amount of time, you'll be getting the results you've been trying to beat your head over with motivation and gratitude to get. And sorry that everybody else in your life has lied to you. They're doing the best they can. They just don't know any better. This is the best they know how to do. And that's terrifying too. Oh God, everybody is literally doing the best they can. Everybody, your parents raising you, your siblings being your siblings, your sweetheart, everybody is doing the best they can.
It's such an overused phrase. It holds no value anymore. Like, because when somebody says that, then you right off the bat know they're doing about 10% of what they can do.
Exactly. And at that moment, 10% of what they can do is 100% of what they are doing.
Yep.
It is literally always the very best effort they had to give right then. So you stop trying to force people to actualize their potential and wanting more for them than they want for themselves. You just meet people where they are and go, well, this is the best they got. Okay. And then you can appreciate what they have to offer, which is usually not much.
Yeah.
And then stop hating them for not being what you think they could be being. So that's a whole lot of baggage you bring to the table about what, oh, you should be doing this. I know you could do better. Well, maybe they can, but right now they're not, so maybe not. Yeah. maybe this is their best.
Cool. So I want to jump back into the mentalist side of what you do, and more specifically, you know, we were talking about how when you're performing this way and you're up on stage, you're not actually reading someone's mind. Like we talked about, like you're not pulling a tiger out of a hat. You're not like truly in their head reading. Well, maybe in some way you kind of are, because you're using, you know, how the brain works, but you're not in their literal head knowing exactly the thought going through their head. But there's techniques that you can use and strategies that you implement where you can, and you probably have a much better word for this, but I'll say predict what they're either going to do or think or say, etc. That seems like that would have very strong correlation to both entrepreneurs, side hustlers, or people just out there in the corporate world working a 9-to-5 job. Like, why haven't I heard of like how the application of these type of strategies in, we'll just say, the corporate world?
Okay. We're going to go meta for a moment to give enough context for me to give the context for the question.
Gotcha.
And this will make sense once we're back to this point.
Yep.
Right. Go. All right. So there are plenty of business gurus who claim to understand the psychology of sales, the psychology of business, of marketing, of whatever. And if you read those books, and I have, because this is the thing I've dedicated my life to. I love this stuff. I just read as many of these as I possibly can. And then they're always citing research or telling you a story about somebody else and this thing happening to somebody else, right? Or it's anecdotal of, so then this thing happened to me, right? So here's the problem with that is the replication crisis in psychological research, which is really fascinating to me, because physics, the study of momentum, energy, and mass, you drop something on Earth, it's always going to drop, right? Just gravity's still working. You can do it every single time. But these bedrock psychological studies that a lot of these pieces of advice are based on, researchers are going, you know what? The 70s was a really weird time. So let's do this study again to just make sure, yeah, it'll work. Oh, it's not working. They're not getting the same results from it, right? So these bedrock fundamental principles that we know inside and out are guaranteed to work, suddenly the science that backs it up isn't backing it up anymore, right? So it's culturally dependent. It's contextually dependent. It's mitigating circumstances dependent. But here's the cool thing. I don't care what your background is. I don't care where you grew up. I don't care what you believe. When that tiger shows up in that cage, you know that's not possible. Magicians have been doing things regardless of culture or society for tens of thousands of years that leverage human psychology. Magicians and mentalists can achieve things by leveraging how people think in a way that these business gurus claim to be able to do but can't back up. So that's when I realized, holy crap, the tradition, the background that I have goes back to before written history with proven results. Otherwise, it wouldn't still be here. And I can stand on stage and demonstrate it in
real time. There's still tigers in cages appearing every day.
Right. And I can still make people think I can read their minds, right? I don't care what the background is. It's just, what? How did he know that? Holy crap, that's terrifying, right? So I realized that the psychological techniques that I'm using on stage are universally applicable. Here's why, right? So this is to the what the hell do I do on stage that could be applicable to business? Mm-hmm. Here it is. The mentalist, me, creates a context for the audience to make logical assumptions that are later shown to not be true. That is, at its bedrock foundation, what I'm doing. So I got to go through that again. The agent of action creates a context for the people experiencing it to make assumptions about what's going on that are later shown to not be true.
Can you give us a practical example?
Practical, very simple. The magician shows a coin and puts it in his other hand and closes his fingers around it. The audience has a logical reason to assume that the coin is in the hand because, hey, he showed us his original hand empty. So the coin has to be somewhere, and I know it's in the hand. He waves, snaps his fingers, opens his other hand, the coin is gone, right? Their assumption is not true. It's very simple, right? It's very simple, but a devastating process, right? So I call it effect first thinking. When I'm designing a show, I think of the routines that I'm going to do. And when I think of the routines, I define what effect I want it to have on my audience. At the end of this routine, do I want them to believe that I can tell the future, that I can influence somebody's choices, that I just astral projected into another room? Do I want to, right? You have to clearly define the outcome for success. What do I want? You absolutely have to define that target. Here's what I want. You go, all right, then what would be a great situation to demonstrate that? That would logically conclude with that belief, with that effect on the audience. Oh, I could do this and I could do that. You go, all right, with that routine, what skills would I need then? Now I go practice those skills, sometimes for a year or two before that routine ever makes its way into the show, right? But in order to know what those skills are, you have to study the real thing so thoroughly that you have to know every single inch and millimeter of that experience from the viewpoint of the audience members. You have to know exactly what they're experiencing. You have to know exactly what it is that they're going to be thinking based on what it is you're showing them to see. So you've got to work through that process from their viewpoint, your viewpoint, and the empirical reality of what's actually happening.
So if this was like someone in, you know, someone is pitching an idea, or they're, I don't know, let's just say they work in sales or something like this, or they have a startup and they're selling their service or something, and they go into this company, you're saying before they go in, they need to basically be picturing what that end result is and obtaining that end result, I guess. And then having that when you're in there, you need to know it so well that you know exactly what the people on the other side are thinking. So that then I think we're about to get to how you can start to basically read their mind and start to get ahead of them.
Exactly. Not only what you're going to do when you're there, but know what you want out of it, right? I want to go in there and pitch. Why do you want to go in and pitch? To get the investment dollars. Okay, that's cool. Now, what's the process you would need to get those investment dollars? Oh, you'd need to draw paper. Well, is that really the first thing? What's the next step that you want after you're done? And that's my pitch. Thank you. And that's why you should book me to come in next week and start working with you, right? And that's why this outcome, right? So in your presentation, you should have already game planned all of what they're going to be thinking about and objecting to, and then address that before they even think of it, and do it in a way that demonstrates you're a professional, right? And you go, and a lot of really smart folks are worried about this, and that is an entirely logical, most important thing to be worried about, which is why we've dedicated most of our resources to make sure that will never happen. Here's A, B, and C, why that is never a possibility with us. And they go, I didn't even think about that. And he's already outthought, wow, okay, he's really thought this through, right? So if at any point in that process, you don't know where you're going, you lose their trust. So think of it like you get on the plane and the pilot goes, wait, where are we going? Yeah, we're going to, I think, San Francisco. I'm told we're going to San Francisco, which I think is that-a-way. So I want off. I'm out. As a performer, as a speaker, when you're on stage, the audience wants to be able to trust that you know what experience they're in for, that they can trust that you are the captain of the ship and that you're going to take them to fun town, right? But if at any point in that process, you kind of lose your place or you lose control, the audience retakes their trust because I no longer feel comfortable giving him control of my attention. And now I've got this shiny thing in my pocket, which is the most interesting thing in the history of ever. So now I'm going to look on Twitter while you're doing whatever it is you're doing up there, right? Same thing in pitching. If you don't know what the hell you're doing, why in the world are they ever going to trust you to do the other thing that you want to do? And there's your excuses again. If you want to do the thing that you got to do, you got to get comfortable with doing everything else around it that's involved, right? In my business, getting on stage and making people laugh, I mean, I'm coming down heavy right now, but I'm actually really hilarious on stage, right? So making people laugh on stage is like 3% of my job. That's it, right? But to the point of the pitching, another way of thinking about that is your website, right? So you think, oh, having a million buttons on this site is perfect. And I want people to have options. So they can go here, they can go there, you can do this, right? But then you're not thinking of the user's experience. So when they land on your website, there should really only be one thing to do. Sign up now, right? Try this thing. Here's why it's awesome to you. Here's the benefit it'll make in your life. Oh yeah, I want that. Pay us now. You're like, okay, pay you now. There you go, right? So your website might look good to you, but be atrocious to a visitor. So you're not taking into account the experience of the visitor, which is the only thing that matters, right? So everything you do absolutely has to be filtered through, how does this help my client? How does this help somebody else make their life better? Yep. And if you aren't providing that kind of value, what are you doing? No wonder nobody's giving you any money, right?
The time will never turn into money.
Exactly, because you haven't figured out, I have to make something other people value, right?
It's rough. So communication, a lot about what we're talking about here is around communication, but what, from your perspective, all the clients you've worked with, all the companies that you've worked with, all the people you've had up on stage, what do you think is the number one thing or one of the top things people get wrong about intentional communication? Meaning when they're in a position that they're trying to either prove their worth in a job review, or they're trying to, I don't know, maybe back to this pitch example, whatever. What's the main thing you see people get wrong with delivering that message, that when they're trying to convince people something?
The main thing people get wrong is believing they've done it.
Well, can you unpack
really?
That?
Yeah. So when I'm on stage and I ask a perfect stranger who I've never met in my life to join me on stage, they are now in a very uncomfortable, weird situation. They're in a room full of people. They're not a professional. This might be the first time they've ever been on stage with bright lights, and their mind is going a mile a minute, thinking about everything other than paying attention to you, right? So they're so self-involved, they're so self-absorbed and freaked out, right, that they just kind of blank out sometimes. So you, as the performer or as the presenter, as the pitch guy, could go through your entire script and go, I said all the things and I should get the result. And then you didn't, because you didn't take time to connect with the the person. Calm them down. Get them to trust you. Show them what to focus on, right? Communication is not talking at somebody. It is connecting with people, right? So you have to learn how to connect with people where they are and then give very clear instructions of what it is you expect from them, what you want them to do, right? Because think of it like two-person choreography, and I've choreographed the whole thing, but my star dancer has never seen it before, and they've got to perform flawlessly. So all the responsibility is on me, right? So when you first are starting out as a performer, as a magician, or as a mentalist, you think you make your instructions clear. Write this down on the paper, fold it up, put it in the envelope, and then you turn around and they crumple it up and they're holding it over their head. Like, how in the world did you hear that from what I told you? What? Right? You're like, what a dum-dum. No, they're doing the best they can. Maybe your instructions weren't clear. Maybe you said it too fast. Maybe you weren't looking them in the eye when you explained it to them, right? I always say you have to take 100% responsibility for any failure of communication, right? So you'll experience it. So there will be a hilarious misunderstanding. The routine will go hilariously wrong. The pitch will crash and burn. You'll be humiliated. whatever that word is. So just learn to laugh and go, well, that just happened. And then when you go home, you go, what in the world did I do that made that a possible outcome? Two, what in the world do I do starting right now to make sure it never happens again? Step three, because I'm a professional and a realist, it will happen again. So how do I address it? What witty comeback do I have? So by the time,
and this was going to be like something, maybe this is where you're going, but so when you're either when you're on stage or this person's, you know, in selling something, do you have plan out all this communication? You have it in your head how you see it going. Do you develop just the plan A because you're so prepared, this is how it's going to go? Or do you have that plan B based on them crumpling the paper up and holding it over their head?
You start out with plan A, B, and I think maybe C might happen. And then G happens first time out the gate. You're like, what the hell was that? Right? So every time your repertoire of experience grows by one, every single time. So every single time you go into pitch, every time you talk to somebody for the first time, you're now bringing 500 times the experience to that one interaction. Then you're bringing 1,000 times that experience to that interaction. And eventually you find the distribution curve of most people's responses fall within this range of response. So you've got all that gamed out and it flows naturally. But the most common, uncommon thing to happen, you've seen 20 times already. So when that super uncommon thing happens, you've got an answer for it. Boom. And then that person's like, holy cow, he is so quick on his feet. He is so smart. And wow, I thought I was going to nail him with that one. Okay. Yeah, he's a professional.
So what you're saying is there's basically no, like most things in life, there's not that, you know, quick seven figures in 2 weeks that you were hinting at earlier. It's the game time repetitions that are going to make you that professional over time.
I love the quote of saying it takes 10 years to create an overnight success, right? Everybody goes, where did that guy come from? He just skyrocketed to stardom. Wow, he's so lucky. I'm like, well, you didn't see him struggle for 10 years, yeah. Right? So it eventually gets to the point where, yeah, you know what? You're making seven figures in 2 weeks from start to finish, but it's taking you a decade to learn how to do that. Or you learn from somebody else and their decade of time spent learning how to do that thing. So then because it's a skill, you're not going to be good at it first time out. So you're not going to get it in 2 weeks. You're going to get it in 6 months, 2 years, maybe, depending on how much bandwidth you have to devote to it. But when you see the results, you're going to devote more bandwidth to it, right? So it's kind of the chicken and egg problem, because everybody goes, well, time is money. So many, many people who haven't figured out their personal alchemy yet are more than willing to spend a very long time on figuring it out themselves, which could take years. But I don't have the money to spend on a $200 course. That's expensive. But if that $200 course could show you in a couple weeks how to make $2,000, you know, you just, what, how are you not doing it? It's because you don't trust the process. You don't trust the person selling it. You don't trust yourself, because nothing you've done yet has worked properly. So why is this guy going to be any different? But what you're doing is you're projecting your failures on them. And the thing I've found the most most is anybody that's creating a course, almost everybody is doing it because they genuinely want to make other people's lives better. There are some charlatans that are just hucksters, like motivational speakers that just want your money. But you know, that's going to be a lesson in and of itself as well, right? Mm-hmm. But also, before you point fingers at the coach for not winning the championship, understand that maybe what needs to happen isn't what you think should be happening. This is the want versus need thing again. Because if what you wanted to do is what worked, it would be working because that's what you've been doing and it isn't working. So it's not. So when they tell you to do something really stupid, this will never work. Well, why don't you try it? Prove it to yourself. Really give it your best shot at making sure you do it exactly right, which to you will be wrong, will feel wrong. There's no way. No, prove it. All right, prove it. Do exactly what they're telling you to do and then eat your words later when it actually works. Because this goofy mindset thing, I don't need mindset. I need motivation. I need like this new widget. I need a new website.
You need to take action.
Yeah, people will spend their entire lives belly aching about why they shouldn't be doing that one thing they should do. That's it. Like that. There you go. Human condition 101. Spend a lifetime talking about not doing the one thing that'll get you results. Yeah. And then wonder what happened. I don't know. I didn't get the results I wanted.
Awesome. Well, Jonathan, it's been a truly a blast to sit here and talk to you and hear about what you're doing with the mentalism and how you've kind of, I guess, almost put a new spin on this and are bringing this to the corporate world to help people with sales, negotiations, all this stuff. It's truly fascinating. I can't wait to dive into your content on your website more. And with that said, how can people find out more about you? And I'm sure you're probably all over the internet and things like that. So give the people the best places to find you.
Thank you. As you can tell, this is the thing I get fired up about. I see so many people struggling to live the life that I clawed my way into. So I desperately want to share with as many people as possible. So thank you for letting me share that. The best place is my hub because I have so many irons and so many fires. Like, think about it. I only had side hustles my entire life. So I've had 8 hours a day, 5 days a week since I was 13. That's 22 years. Do the math, carry the one. I've had 45,000 hours more than most people to do with as I please. So if you go by the 10,000 hours to mastery, I've mastered 4 domains when most people don't even have the time to master one, right? So I'm really good at several things that all interlock, right? But if somebody hadn't waded through this hour of me ranting, it wouldn't make sense. But yeah, no, nobody's good at all that. So my central hub is jonathanpritchard.guide. That's kind of my portfolio page where I go, and then here's this project. You want to learn Kung Fu? I share Kung Fu with people, right? Because as you can tell, I'm a more kumbaya, soft-spoken, love people in the right direction kind of guy. No. Look, if somebody were trying to punch you in the face, what would you do about it? I would motivate my way out of it. No, you wouldn't. You need to move, all right? So you can find your way to the Kung Fu, to my book, Think Like a Mind Reader, which delves into the psychology of motivation, discipline, connecting, communication, relationships, all that kind of good stuff. So if you like books, go to thinklikeamindreader.com. You can get it on Amazon. There's no digital version available because there's a mind reading trick built into the physical book so that you can use the book as a prop to fool your friends. And in order for that trick to work, you absolutely have to become a phenomenal communicator. And I don't want to take that experience away from my people. So I am never going to offer that book as a digital download because I don't want to take that ability from them.
Yeah.
So that you can go there. So those are the two main things. Cool. So yeah, we didn't even get into the Kung Fu, but
man, I know. Now I'm kind of sad. Like, we're 3 minutes. You want to sneak peek?
I mean, I can give you the URL. Yeah, it's wingchun.life. So wing like a bird, chun.life. It's a viable URL. It's weird.
I'm checking it out right now.
Let's see. The tagline for that is life and business advice with a punch.
Nice. Nice. I'll have to dive into this some more.
So it's the mind, it's the body, it's together, it's a life, right? It's nice. It's amazing. So yeah, I've mastered the mind, mastered the body, mastered your life. Like that's it.
That is cool, man. Well, again, thanks a ton for swinging by. This has been awesome. It's been a blast. Now I'm like watching the videos here on the background of your page.
Just throwing people around with love, always with love.
Love, power, beauty, and peace.
That's right, man.
Cool. Dude,
thank you so much. Find me on Twitter. I'm super active on Twitter. I'm the most active on my Wing Chun account because I can be more ornery on that one. but the Jonathan Pritchard Twitter account is more corporate friendly.
Right.
Yes, we results and here mindset and motivation and all this stuff. But the cool cats know where the hard hitting truth is.
Wing Chun. Yep. Cool, man. Well, this was a blast. Thanks a ton for swinging by, talking to the Hustle to Freedom audience. I personally really enjoyed it and couldn't think of a better way to spend my Monday evening.
Amen to that. Me too. Thank you so much. And I am so glad to know you.
Awesome. Thanks a lot, man. We'll be in touch.
You got it. Later.
And that's a wrap. If you enjoyed that chat with Jonathan, be sure to go check him out over at likeamindreader.com. If you want to check out the first chapter of his book, go ahead, pick up that phone, scroll down to the show notes, and you'll find a link where you can read the first chapter for free. So, Freedom Chasers, if you like these episodes, be sure to go rate and review the podcast in iTunes or in the Apple Podcast app. It would mean a ton to me. Until next time, keep hustling.